And welcome back to Richmond Tiger Talk. My name's Nick.
And I'm Andy.
And here we are at the eve of another season. For the men, sadly, well, it's all, I think there's mixed feelings with the end of the women, but, yeah, you know, some optimism nonetheless. How are you feeling?
I think your opinion of the women was really highlighted by that very long pause before you managed to say something positive. But look, it's the eve of the Thursday.
I've got some thoughts about that.
We try to err on the side of positive here, which is, and so I think we'll definitely talk. I was at the game, obviously. We'll talk about that later in the show. But really, this is the lead up to the big game, the game that's sort of been a key part of our lives now for, believe it or not, we used to lose these Thursday night start of the season games. Do you believe that, Nick?
It's been all the time, yeah.
Yeah, and so this is, the streak's been going to since 2014, and it can't last forever, but I'm so excited to have men's football back, to be going to the MCG with a big crowd, basically a team that's sort of 80-90% full strength. Can't wait to see it. Can't wait to see how the new players will integrate into the team. I'm really looking forward to it.
Yeah, it'll be a great occasion. Look, I haven't heard anything about the likely crowd, but they're saying the Wednesday night grand final rematch is probably a little bit below non-COVID expectations, because I think, you know, there's still a reasonable number of people who are not comfortable being in a big crowd. So yeah, I think anyone who makes any comment this season about, you know, crowds being fickle is just a bad faith actor. Like there are a lot of people still being very directly affected by the ongoing impact of COVID, and yeah, the crowds are a thing that some people aren't prepared to do, and fair enough.
Well, I don't think
that was a pretty Debbie Downer.
Yeah, I feel we're veering into sociological comment here. You know, it might be that some people's lifestyles have changed. They've discovered they like watching at home. Who knows? We're not here to speculate.
Oh, look, I haven't been to a game in a couple of years, and I'm absolutely gagging to be back.
Yes, you are, but we do a podcast every week about Richmond. We're clearly not representative, and you only need 5% of people to feel a certain way, and 5% of people
feel another way.
And you're down by 10%.
No, and even if people do like it, yeah, they may just not feel comfortable. So yeah, I do think it's the point of the comment isn't to be political about it. It's just to say that, look, we can't just wish things back to normal, and I don't think it'll quite be normal on Thursday night, but it'll be a pretty close approximation. You know, we've Nanks tested positive for COVID last week and is apparently going to clear protocols tomorrow and to be fit to play. So sort of things are definitely improving on that front, but yeah, it's still a bit of a roller coaster ride.
I'm just glad we're having the season. I'm glad now that in the age preview that they're talking about things you won't hear is AFL game delayed because of COVID. I'm glad that we don't have to leave for that constant chaos. So I'm far more interested to talk about football than COVID.
And although the, you know, West Coast are a sobering reminder of what could happen to a team throughout the season. They're even talking about having a top-up player in their squad, although it may not quite come to that. But they're down to about 26 available players. So yeah, on a slight tangent, I just saw an article that we approached Basher Hooley about being on our top-up list, and he politely declined, but I thought that was very interesting.
Yeah, and obviously we've lost one of the players we might have got, which is Patrick Naish, who's now been on the Eagles' top-up list. But look, I love that kind of stuff.
Oh, no, he's
he's on the full senior list, yeah.
He's, yeah, which is great. I'm really glad he got a another opportunity.
And you can say this in a narky way, but, you know, he is an outside ball player and they do better in Western Australia, and the Eagles might only want him to play three home games, and we wish him all the best.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
He was a good Richmond servant.
And so, look, yeah, Tyson Stengel seems likely for a round one debut for Geelong, and I think he'd be the rare Geelong player that I think Richmond players would really wish him all the best.
I've come around on Tom Hall because he's such an amazing boundary throwing ruckman, but we digress.
Didn't Tomahawk injure Ivan Soldo?
Yeah, that is true. Yeah, I'm far too two rocking worlds combined. Nick, we've come to 6 minutes, and my issue, my attempts to try and segue back to the game are failing dismally. Now, Nick, have the nerves started yet? Have you talked?
I'm avoiding the topic because I'm in panic mode already. Like the betting line has nudged in 1 point with the news that Gloston and McIntosh are going to be out injured for the game. And I'm very nervous.
Yeah, so look, that we now have, if you count, so presumably if Grimes does play, and he'll presumably not be at 100%, but even if he doesn't play, from our three-time premiership backline, we are missing at least 9 flags with Basha, Asprey, and Vossi all missing. And, you know, they were round one players last year. And now we have, maybe Basha missed, but, you know, they're the best 18. And now potentially Grimes as well. So you have 12 flags going out of the team, and they've all been stalwarts. All very important to our backline setup. It's great news that Gibkus is drafting, but to the
debuting.
He's been drafted. But the point of, you know, he's a first game 196 centimeter player in his first year of AFL football. We can't expect miracles, but it's a big cumulative loss to the back line. Now, losing Lambert hurts, but losing and Graham, but losing sort of two of your second line mids, it's okay. But yeah, I am. Vossi especially did get me slightly nervous.
I know. Gibkus, first sort of proper 18-year-old rookie since Dan Rioli in 2016. So that's a fair effort. I literally couldn't find the last proper key position player to debut round one. It's a big feather in his cap as to what a good preseason he's had, as we've discussed. And, you know, you always love to see a debut, but, you know, it's also, with him and Tarrant back there, it is a very new look backline, and maybe it doesn't have the same feeling of stability and reliability that our defence has had. Dan Rioli's transitioned back there reasonably well, but still has some question marks. And if Ralph Smith is back there as well, he's a very young player.
Yeah, so I don't think you said maybe doesn't have the same feeling of stability. It definitely doesn't have the same feeling of stability. The question is whether it'll play well enough to get the job done. And Nick, it's amazing, you know, sort of after 4 or 5 months of not seeing Carlton play, and with a new coach, you can convince yourself that the forward line's good.
Well, And their defence as well. Although you look at the stats from their game against Melbourne, and it was their midfielders who had an absolute day out. Matt Kennedy 37 disposals and a couple of goals. Patrick Cribbs, 30 disposals and 4 goals. Yeah, it was almost some of the stats were you almost didn't quite know what to make of them. But yeah, it was a pretty impressive game. So yeah, and new coach. Maybe, you know, there's always an unknown factor. Well, round one is always an unknown factor. There's perhaps less chance of some wacky AFL umpiring interpretations this year. The not talking back to umpires seems to be the only real new point of emphasis that was noticeable in pre-season, and
Jack paid it $1.10 to be the first Richmond player done for that.
Well, yes, those 50 metres given away in the forward line are a lot less damaging. But yeah, it's being cautiously optimistic that there's less risk there. But yeah, I don't know. Carlton are certainly going to come out all guns blazing. So yeah, I don't know. Cripps has always given us issues.
Yeah, I think on that, look, he has been too big for our midfield. He's bullied our midfield. He's very physically large. And I'm glad you said that because, you know, he was pretty ordinary last year. But it is helpful to remember he was once good.
Yeah, yeah, definitely.
I mean, the key thing, Walsh being out is a huge blow for them.
Oh, absolutely. For all Carlton's missteps, three of their five highest played players are in their back line, and Jacob Wiedering is not one of them, and he's their best defender. Like, you know, Saad and Zach Williams, they've spent a lot of money and resources in perhaps one of the less valuable positions in the ground. Mitch McGovern is down back. I'm trying to get value out of him with Jones having stepped away from football. So, yeah, they're an interesting team.
A couple of – Zach Williams was once good.
Very good as a halfback. Yeah, excellent.
And actually played – I think they actually signed him. He played at least one good year, getting for the forward for the GWS. But he's now had his last season with the 2019 Zach Williams when they made the flag. He was a top 50 player, he was not good last year, his last year of the GWS, and he wasn't good last year as well. And he's 27, so maybe that Zach Williams, it's not necessarily gone, but, you know, that's 2 years of bad form. Obviously, Saad is very well discussed, although, you know, Williams should be discussed as much as he is, but Saad seems to be, I guess because he's eye-catching with the long-running bounces. He's got bigger. Like, there are so many well-paid wildcard pieces here with a new coach, which is, I can tell you're sort of struggling to get your head around. And I just wanted to go back to the forward line briefly, because it's hard to get a take. They have been a bit injured in the forward line, but McKay's, like, there was a reason why he was a superstar, kicking or averaging above 3 goals a game on a Cherokee team.
Yeah, he's very good, and he's enormous.
He's 205 centimetres.
Yeah.
He's got 10 centimetres on Tarrant. By the way, I checked Nick, so Tarrant's 1 centimetre taller than Asprey. Of course, I'm sure you knew that off the top of your head, but I somehow have more faith in Dave than, because and maybe we'll come to Bolter, but to me, when you look at the Carlton forward line, is plan A going to be Tarrant to spend all day on McKay? Surely you'd have to have a long, hard look about bringing Noah back. And Charlie Conroe, Kurnow. People have forgotten, but he had two seasons where he was above 1.5 goals a game. It was 30-plus games. And he's won 92. So he's not – he had a – obviously last year was like so much of the team. Well, the coach got fired, self-explanatory. But he's actually quite talented. Nick, I was very amused when looking at last year's goal kickers because, you know, their season really was a car wreck, that their second-best goal – Betts had 27. With all this sort of fanfare, it was sort of unclear that how well he was still playing. So probably his retirement at least helps their forward pressure. But and you had heard of him, Nick, but I discovered that something called Matt Owies kicked 15 goals for the Blues last year, and I managed to completely miss it.
So he's a basketballer who was at the University of Hawaii for 1 year just before Marte Kalina got there. He's a good athlete, as you'd expect for a basketballer, but he's solid. And the other one's likely to be Corey Durden, who's a second year player. It's again, we've talked about this a few times, that Carlton had talked about a young team, but so Durden's in his second season was a top 40 pick. Showed a bit in preseason. He's going to be likely the only Carlton player under the age of 22 in the team on Thursday. So it's sort of, you know, this is a mature team.
Which it will have at least two if Hugo gets picked.
Yeah, you'd think so. For all people like to talk, use the language of, you know, an emerging team. And look, McKay's, as we just said, he's pretty young for a key forward. And Walsh is obviously young and a star when he's available. But yeah, the rest of the team's pretty mature, and there's some threat to that, I think.
Yeah, and they've invested so much and had so many.
Yeah, the chips have been pushed in. Like, I haven't even mentioned Adam Chera yet, who you know, we obviously. Was the topic of some speculation where he was going to go, and was, you know, would we be linked to him? But, you know, he's clearly a good midfielder. He's not a great midfielder. He played really well against us, unfortunately, last year. But, you know, if he's your third or fourth midfielder, and, you know, he seems to finally have pushed Ed Kurnow out of the team after seemingly having been in their midfield forever. But yeah, it's that this team, you know, Carlton doesn't want to wait anymore. They want to contend and be a good team. And everything they've done over the past 3-4 years hasn't been a long, slow build. You know, they've got sick of being an embarrassment, and they've cashed in chips to put a good competitive team on the field. And yeah, we'll see that on Thursday night, I think.
Yep. Nick, look, I think, you know, speaking of...
Too negative?
Oh, no, I was just saying, speaking of embarrassment, you know, I did feel sorry for Michael Voss, who, you know, I think he's done his penance now, but for his crazy bossy time in Brisbane, having to answer questions about which end of the ground Mitch McGovern is going to play at, and trying to sound enthusiastic when he said, when he's talking about, well, his brother's a really good interceptor, so he can be too. And but the great thing about him is he can play at either end of the field.
Yep. That he can certainly line up at either end of the field.
Yes, and best of luck to him. Lord knows the Blues fans have given him hard enough time, so they don't need us to. Ruckman, Nick.
Yes, well, I was just going to get to the Ruckman, because I think Pitney, you know, very large lump of a human being, and they are potentially having De Koning as backup. If they're playing two specialist rucks, then surely we'd have to as well.
Yeah, and they're not. Pitanei is, as a tap ruckman, his hit out win percentage is almost exactly the same as Nack's. So they're, and yeah, as you say, it's a big solid Nack. He just doesn't have, I'm very fundamentally comfortable about that matchup for Nack, because he won't, you know, anytime Nack's at least drawing even in the taps, he's probably going to win the matchup, because he's going to outwork Pitanei on the ground, and Pitanei's not great around the ground. Certainly hardworking, but he's your stereotypical rookie list ruck. And De Koning, interesting guy. And look, he's got rid of his eye-catching hair, I noticed in the preseason, which is disappointing. I think that had helped his fame somewhat. And he's gamey, but he's not a great tap ruckman. He's about the same size. He's, you know, 203. I think Soldo can have him. So the thing that worries me slightly with the two ruck setup is one of them, De Koning in particular, going forward and kicking a goal or two on our back line. But and that's it's when you're worried about the second ruck kicking goals on you, it's really the thing you're most worried about, is it? But I think two rucks against two rucks, and I'm fundamentally comfortable where we are in that matchup.
Yeah, and we talked last week about Noel Bolter. Look, he's clearly in our best 22 players, just the question of where you play him, but sort of almost regardless of where you play him, it gives you flexibility to respond if they do go tall in their forward line. And look, if we've got Grimes, Broad, Tarrant, Gipkus with Bolter as backup, that's a fair bit of height.
It is a fair bit of height. There is the who gets the alpha, which is McKay, obviously, and there's really only one option for that, particularly if Grimes is hands not great. So, yeah, I sort of, that all said, and with big concession of view, that Noah is now best 22, I think I'm pretty confident he'll get picked. But I think where he plays in the other end, and I appreciate the, we would stretch them for height too, but I think
that's true. They'd be playing what, McGovern on Rewald?
Oh my god, because obviously Jones is retired for football, for medical non football reasons, but I don't know. I just like I'd be sort of like McKay could win the game for them. So like you almost sort of wonder whether it's the we can get matchups in the forward line anyway. Whether you go after their biggest forward threat, so you put Noah as your option A, because Tarrant's really best in the second role, not playing in against the Grills. Anyway, we'll see. But really interesting thing. It'll be, you know, the first game, first bounce, when they run to position, it's always exciting when you've got these matchup questions.
I know. Yeah, I'm be interesting to see if they play Jack Graham, who's apparently been in full training for a bit, but obviously hasn't played any of the preseason games. So is it too big a risk? So that, you know, that certainly helped Jack Ross's chance of getting a game. But yeah, I don't think there's a lot of suspense at selection otherwise.
No, if you did the sums from the last practice game, which seemed to be our best 22, which by the way was not the approach Carlton took, the best 22, there was only one or two questions of doubt, and I think one of the biggest things we got a clear indication on was Hugo going past Pickett and as sort of the wing half back option. I think Hugo did nothing to reduce his chances in the last practice game. So I think we discussed this last week. That seems to me more likely than not. Or three, you know, no surprise, nothing would shock me. But you know, Surely a fully fit Ross would make more sense than a Graham, because we don't know the inside fitness job. So lineup. So it really seems like, yeah, as you say, I think there's not the biggest surprise they've cleverly already announced. And even that wasn't a huge surprise.
No, it's not a surprise at all. But you know, good to see. So yeah, to finish, what's your level of panic?
Well, I did manage to talk myself into this awful Carvel team, who were just, you know, they're abominable last year, like fundamentally uncompetitive for large parts of the end of the year. I managed to convince themselves that they're quite good and it's a battle of equals, and I'm nervous. So, yeah, look, I still have a underlying confidence that sort of the first thing we said was after the Hawthorn game, actually, the Hawthorn game, or maybe the game before, is all our best midfielders are fit. And when Koch and Dusty and Prestia all look fit, and Nank, you know, and Edwards is fit too, it's just, and they're all looking good, Nick. That's just such a good start. And these guys have won too many premierships for us not to give them the benefit of the doubt.
That's a good way of putting it. All right. So, that's your next live football experience. Going back to Collingwood at Victoria Park like on the weekend?
It was lovely as a ground. Just forgetting result, about
the weather and the event. Thumbs up.
Yeah, and look, it was to be positive, and I don't want to be too positive because it wasn't good, the on-field result. But I will say it is. I don't think there's many people in this camp, but if you went to the first AFLW or one of the first cup games of Richmond and then came and haven't been back since, go again next year, because it is, I know there's sort of some politics about saying it's got, the standard has gone up, but the cliche is true. Like, you notice it straight away. It was my first live game of the year for reasons outside my control, but the football, especially early on, the football was pinging. You know, the hits were hard. The people were into the game for the first five. You know, and that frantic first 5 minutes of every game where people are burning off the adrenaline. And it was much better footy. And you know, there's plenty of people on both teams who can kick the ball nicely, 40 plus meters, which certainly on the Richmond side, that was a pretty short list 2 years ago. But yeah, look. A lot of it, aesthetic was good, and it's very chilled out. It's great to go down to Collingwood. It's a lovely, lovely ground. They've got, because it's not used as a training facility, it's a far more community field than Carlton and, frankly, Richmond will be now or after the redevelop. It's more of a museum of football than it is a current football facility, and it's a wonderful place to watch a game. And it was beautiful weather, and I was glad I wasn't playing. It is hot. You know, 23, 24. Sorry, I'm crapping on, but I'm trying to say a lot of. And the one last thing I'll say about experience, Nick. There was a moment where, and I apologize, I've told you the story already, but for the benefit of the listeners, Beck Miller got the ball, and Lynch looked. She was just she'd taken a mark, and she was going back on the mark, and Becky Lynch broke into the clear for a switch, and I called out switch, switch, switch. And she wisely didn't switch. It wasn't the right call.
Beth Lynch rather than the footballer rather than the wrestler.
Yes, nice one. Anyway, the younger Lynch. She didn't, but I realised that my voice was carrying, because I was in a quieter part of the ground, there wasn't much crowd around me, my voice was carrying very clearly, and everyone around me could hear me, and including the players. Like, I'm not, and I just thought, I just might cheer a bit quieter because, you know, when
you don't want to be that guy.
Well, you just don't want to, when you're screaming out something in the football, like, no one else can hear you, like the 10 people around you, but you're doing it for your own benefit, but like you're there, it's like, I don't actually want to be contributing individually to the atmosphere of this game. So yeah, but it was interesting, but I did, the one thing was in, we really struggled just turning to the game a bit. Like, I think it is really hard to play our style of game plan with the lesser players and the fewer players on the ground. And one of the rare times in the third quarter where we've got a really good forward press going, and we got another repeat shot from it. The shot was missed, but it was a pretty good shot. Like it was really good footy. You could really sort of lean over and encourage. You could help sort of build the forward pressure tension. But yeah, it was going to the game. Yeah, the story of the game is the story of the season. Nick, have you looked at our average disposal statistics, team wide?
Look, I know we had 100 less of them than Collingwood. I haven't looked at the aggregates for the season. I've looked at
we were done 2-1 in the inside 50s, and you know you could see the dam was going to burst. We didn't get a single switch all day. We couldn't move the ball off the line. They were a better team. We were very game, and we could have potentially kicked. We probably deserved to kick at least one more goal. But Monique Conti averaged basically 24 possessions a game.
Yep.
Guess who the second highest possession winner averaged? Guess.
Gabby Seymour with 13.
Yeah, well done.
I looked it up while researching this show.
So it's not the first time I've had this thought with the Richmond team. But I did sort of, my God, some of these people. I've had the same thought with the men's. I must admit, with young Trent Cotchin, that Monique Conti is too good for some, to be playing on the same team as some of her teammates.
Yeah, look, there, and it was exacerbated on the weekend with Tessa Levy out, Katie Brennan out, down both Hoskins.
Yeah, the sisters. Yeah,
yeah. And you know, Ellie McKenzie last year averaged 16 disposals a game, and only averaged 11. This year, coming back from a pretty serious injury, although she did have a lovely spin move. Spin move / shrug in the middle of the ground, just in case you'd forgotten what a powerful athlete she is. But yeah, it is, and there was definitely some positives. Like it was really nice that Amelia Yassir got, you know, she's finished with 3 goals for the season, including our only goal on the weekend. I mean, what you're saying about forward press, I thought she brought energy, real energy to the forward line all year. I don't think it's a good thing that speaks to them both that they had really improved seasons. But it's probably not a good thing that both Beck Miller and Maddie Shevlin are in the top 4 in the AFLW for rebound 50s. Yeah, probably that's an opportunity stat, unfortunately.
Yeah, totally. And sort of looking at the season as a whole, as we pointed out before, there's a problem with competitive balance.
Oh my God. So, well, not to hijack your point. So we've finished with the same number of wins and almost the identical percentage for this season compared to last season. The top 6 teams that make the finals are the same. You have to go down to the teams that finished 9th and 10th, swapped places. But otherwise, the top 8 teams were the same as they were from last season. And yeah, the North Melbourne's the only relatively recent expansion team that's made the jump up. And, you know, the Bulldogs, as a team that was particularly badly hit, both by us and North Melbourne, have taken a slide down the ladder. But the competition is stuck. There's very little movement. Incumbency's just too big an advantage. So they've got to find a way to bring in the new teams without further exacerbating just this structural inertia that the AFLW ladder's got at the moment.
Yeah, it's. I must admit, at the end of it, I was sort of. I turned to someone I'll speak to the ground, and I said, "I'm not entirely sure what's wrong here," because it was, you know, not only did we were big underdogs, we the odds blew out in the sort of in the 24 hours before the game, and then we still comfortably didn't cover the spread, and. You know, we're not getting better like the other teams, but like just looking at Richmond. So, like, you don't want to, it's the, as you say, North is the only successful team. And I was sort of, why are we so uncompetitive towards these other teams? And I can't help but feel it's the bottom six potentially, and I'm not going to name names here because they're semi-professional athletes and I don't want to drag people through the mud. But if you sort of, there's a lot of people that I think, you know, I might exaggerate when I say Mong Conti is the best player in the AFLW.
Certainly an all Australian this year, I thought.
Yeah, but you know, we don't have. She's the only player we've got in the extended squad for the AFLW under 22 team.
Ellie McKenzie would be on last year's form. Would be a walk up. But,
yeah, and I'd just say it is Conti. The stats are clear about, so it's not really a very big revelation. But she does really put in defensively, and it's impressive. I just
Well, her tackle count doubled this year, so she's won more ball and worked even harder the other way. Like, it's super impressive.
So I say this with a great deal of humility that I'm not sure that it's the answer. But if I had to put a theory of what's the issue? It's not the top end. It's our depth and our bottom players. A lot of them are great stories. They're great. But they're not anywhere near competitive compared to the bottom six of the side teams like Collingwood.
That would be my theory.
I don't know how you address that in competitive balance.
Yeah. Well, it wasn't. You know, we were unfortunately tapping into the real. I mean, literally went into the supplementary part of the playing list. So, you know, there was a fairly long list of absences at time, which and exposed depth that we unfortunately didn't have. I mean, there's an issue as well that, you know, you have just in terms of, you know, young players coming through that with a few exceptions, you know, just does take the draftees a few years to get their fitness up to level. So yeah, as in the men's, the draft is an imperfect means of equalisation, except over a sustained period of time. So. Yeah, it's pretty tricky. I do feel a bit guilty that, you know, we spoke favourably about the idea that had got some momentum of moving to an August start date for the next season. But, yeah, it turns out they hadn't really talked to the players about it. And there's some potential issues because you mentioned they're part-time athletes. Like, a lot of them have to take time off work for football, and that's a real problem doing two seasons where one starts 5 months after the other finishes. So, yeah.
So the in the cycle of rumors around that, in fairness, look, it's okay to have our opinion was suggest humbly, and we just spoke as fans.
Oh, no, look, the structural reason for it is fine. But for the 100 millionth time, the AFL had half an idea and ran with it without sort of thinking through the unintended consequences.
I think there may have been more consultation than perhaps was talked about. Like perhaps the 20th player on the list doesn't get as much say in it as perhaps the elite union. I think
there seems to be some angst about it.
Of course, but it's easier to attack the consultation process than it is to deal with the substance of the issue. And I'm not an expert on either.
Look, I haven't seen a lot of pushback on the idea because it does make a lot of sense to, you know, the rock hard grounds and the stinking hot weather. It helps deal with both issues. So.
Yeah, and while still giving it some freedom, but look, it is a tough issue, and no one's ever going to agree on the perfect time to
play. No, and look, it's still a very new competition as well. So a new and rapidly expanding competition. So some growing pains are inevitable, I think. You know, we are very much Richmond supporters first and foremost, and we'd pretty much enjoy the competition more the further we get up the ladder. So
yeah, just to like to feel like you had some hope because
it's the same with the men. I very much I pay less attention to the teams at the top of the ladder when we're not one of them. So
yeah, totally. As you'd expect, there's many more years to work it out. There seems to be an issue where there's not enough transactions in mid player, because I don't think there's much of a financial incentive for the mid-level players on good teams to disperse out. Now it works perfectly with the men, but it seems to work even worse.
Yeah. If you're getting a regular senior game, it's hard to get people to move. And you can get people like Matty Shevlin, who wasn't getting a regular, was only playing sort of 3-4 games a year for Collingwood, and she gets the chance to play every week for us, which is great. But you know, you're not. It's a pretty slow build, with that type of player. But look, I think perhaps the story of the season, while not the improvement we would have hoped for, we can still be grateful that we had a season at all. And with some hiccups and reschedule, you know, it looked pretty close to a normal season. Grateful for that.
Yeah, and I go back to my original point that don't go down and watch a game.
Mm. Yep.
Don't judge. Don't leap your preconceived notions, whether they be positive or negative. Because you know, frankly, it was an interesting atmosphere. But there was definitely more. The atmosphere was almost polite, which is not how you describe the Vic Park. But there was definitely more venom and more investment coming from the Collingwood fans. I hate to say that. You would expect that where they are on the ladder.
You would. I know. The end of a season when you're not making the finals is always a bit deflating.
Yeah. Also, they didn't play until the fourth quarter. They didn't play like that, which was to their credit.
Yeah, credit to their credit. Yeah. Look, I hope they get it all sorted out for the next season. I hope they managed to get to set up the new teams in a way that perhaps hurts the teams at the top. So we've got a chance to move up the ladder for next time. But yeah, look, it's been enjoyable. There's still the opportunity. You know, some of the players will rotate through Port Melbourne in the VFL Dub. W, which can be fun, and you know, perhaps a chance for Ellie McKenzie to run into some form through the year, but yeah, no.
And there's a possibility they might be back in 6 months.
Well, five.
Yeah.
Well, so yeah, I'm very much hoping that that'd be pretty exciting to have both a men's finals campaign and the women doing well at the same time as well. That'd be pretty fun.
Yeah, look, one, say open mind, and said with all our opinions on the timing of the season and the consultation process, as said with a heavy degree of humility. Now, back to Carlton, which is in 2 days' time.
Yeah.
Final thoughts?
Oh, you know, just nerves and terror for, you know, as is always the case at this time. What you were saying was pretty convincing. Like if the flag midfield, you know, Cochin, Martin, Prestia, Nank, all fit and firing, Shea Bolton, flashing, Jack and Lynch up forward, Grimes down back. It's a pretty solid start to a team. So
I can feel half our leadership screaming, shadow too as well. but yeah, completely.
That's certainly, if we play well, we should win.
I think that's fair. As I said, everything you said except you know, the question is how quickly does the back line gel? Because frankly, it's probably fairly new setup. Even they probably didn't, you know, maybe they played that 5 minutes in practice game, but that exact lineup probably hasn't lined up much before.
Well, and what do you take about that? They looked pretty solid against Hawthorn. Mm.
Yeah, it was. There was a lot going on then, and mostly not bad, not good for Hawthorn. Nick, there are three words I want to start our next podcast with, and they are not today, Satan.
I know. Is this 12 years that we've been doing this?
Yeah, 11. Yeah, it is. Yeah, 2011. I meant 2000. Yeah. Anyway, but
oh, yeah. 2000. Yeah, so it's the 12th season.
We'll work it out later.
I'm Nick.
I'm Andy.
We're Richmond Tiger Talk.
It starts with a vision. If we're not locked into that, might as well pack up and go home.
You're talking about three flags by 2020.
Fitzroy has played in more finals than you guys.
And after 13 straight losses, the Tigers are no longer toothless. Their first win for 2010. Carmichael Hunt. Look at Jeffrey.
West on to kick a goal from here. He does. What a start. Can he just slow? He's gone. No free kick, surely.
In the final home and away game of the season, obliterating the Tigers by 113 points.
First preliminary final in 16 long years, and they have done it. They've won. The Tigers are into the prelim.
Go Tigers.